I'll just introduce our moderator. I'm sure Neil will introduce everybody else. Neil is the founding president and CEO of the Greater Philadelphia Business Coalition on Health. He happens to be my board chair, so he's very important. They represent over 1.5 million covered lives nationally, including 750,000 lives in southeastern Pennsylvania, southern New Jersey, and Delaware. Neil has over 30 years of healthcare research and management experience in academia, Medicaid managed care, and consulting organizations. And he was associate dean for research in the Jefferson College of Population Health and currently serves as the chair of our board. So thank you.
Hi, everybody. So as Mike said, I run the Philadelphia-based coalition. We've been engaged in obesity and diabetes prevention for several years. Today, we're going to be talking about the DPP, the Diabetes Prevention Program. So let me just ask, how many of you feel you're already very familiar with the DPP? Okay, like one-third maybe of you, so I'm glad we're doing this session. I was talking to another coalition director a few months ago. I said, we're very engaged in the DPP, and she said, oh, we've been doing diabetes prevention for many, many years, which of course doesn't even make sense because the DPP hadn't been around for many, many years. So it was very clear that there's a lot of misconception about what is the DPP. We have been actively promoting it in our coalition in Philadelphia because, to Ted's point earlier, it's one of the few things we've seen that really is evidence-based and has the data to show it works. So over the years, we've been educating employers, providing support to them, and helping them implement the DPP. Of our 45 employer members, we have 15 now who've implemented at least one cohort of the DPP. And I haven't heard anybody who's not thrilled with the results they're seeing. So we wanted to bring to you today a session to educate you on what is the DPP, how can it be implemented. And so I'm just very quickly going to introduce our panelists. We're going to go down the row then with their presentations. To first start with Rachel Blatcher from the CDC, who is going to be talking about what is the DPP. Then we have Ali Jaglowski from the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors, who we've been working very closely with on the local level, but NACDD has been very involved with CDC nationally in helping employers learn about and implement the DPP. Then you'll hear from two employers, Mark Goldberg from Latham & Watkins, a global law firm, and Melissa Hohenberger, one of my members, from VWR, a manufacturer and supplier for laboratories and scientific facilities. And finally, Chris Skizak, one of my fellow coalition directors for the Houston Coalition, talking about their efforts now to roll out the DPP. So I'll just start by saying, when we ask employers, what are your biggest health concerns? They always say diabetes and obesity as numbers one and two in some order, almost every employer. And if it's not diabetes and obesity, it's cancer, which is obesity related. It's musculoskeletal, which is obesity related. I mean, it's hard to find a chronic disease that doesn't have an obesity link. And so this is a really important topic. And so, Rachel, we're going to kick off with you telling us, what is the DPP?
Okay. Is this thing on? Okay. And I'm really nervous about this clicker because it doesn't seem like it's working, so I'm not sure what I'm pushing. Hold on. Okay, hi. Hi, everyone. Whew. Okay, so as Neil said, I'm from CDC, and I'm here to talk to you about what the National Diabetes Prevention Program is. And I know it's actually, this is probably the rudest thing to do to someone who's ever invited you to speak on a panel. The DPP is actually the clinical research trial. When we're talking about it in its programmatic form, we call it the National DPP. It's okay, I don't expect people to change their habits. As long as they're talking about it, we're really, really happy. But just to be clear, the National Diabetes Prevention Program is what I'm gonna be talking about today. And how we're working on achieving coverage. And I'll say I feel a little bit like a fish out of water here because You all and the organizations and the payers that you represent are kind of new and exciting in foreign territory. So if there's any opportunities to share or explain anything to me, I'd appreciate it. If I say anything in public health speak that doesn't make sense to you, please stop me and say, Rachel, you're talking public health. And away we go. When we talk about pre-diabetes, which the National Diabetes Prevention Program is all about, we like to start with this frightening slide, an iceberg. So the iceberg is a metaphor. The part of the iceberg that sits on top of the water represents 30 million people with diabetes who may or may not know it, most of whom know it, but have diabetes. It's what's underneath that I'm focusing on today. And the part under the water represents 84 million adults in the United States that have pre-diabetes. That's about 1 in 3. And the scary thing here is that 90% do not know they have it. So time to start educating ourselves. And so that is, in a nutshell, is our public health challenge. We also know that pre-diabetes can lead to type 2 diabetes, but it can also lead to complications due to cardiovascular disease and stroke. So the presenter before us mentioned this. It's been mentioned throughout the day. These things are all related. The National DPP is based on the research of the Diabetes Prevention Program, known as the DPP, but I won't ding anyone if they talk about the program as DPP. We just want you talking about it. I'll just cringe on the inside. It's okay. basically observed that with modest behavior change, participants were able to lose 5 to 7% of their body weight and reduce their risk of proceeding to diabetes by 58%. For people who were 60 and above, that was 71%. In quick summary, it is a year-long program, so a full 12 months. The first half of the program is usually about 16 to 24 weekly sessions, followed by monthly sessions. And it's led by a trained lifestyle coach and is done in a peer group setting, in person or now virtually. Okay. Once the trial was concluded, there were a number of other translation studies that helped inform other critical guidelines that have helped begin to support us in making the case for coverage. The USPSTF task force has issued a number of recommendations with B ratings at least, but in case anyone's not aware, any recommendation that has an A or B rating is required by insurers to cover. And so this has really helped us to build the case for coverage for the program. Additionally, in 2016, the Institute for Clinical and Economic Review found that the National Diabetes Prevention Program's lifestyle change program is cost-effective and can be cost-saving. So I've briefly given an overview of what the program is. You are found to have pre-diabetes either through a screening risk assessment or through a blood test, and you decide to take it, and it's a trained lifestyle coach working with you and a group of peers for a year. But it's a lot more than that. That in and of itself is what we call the lifestyle change program. The National DPP in and of itself is a group of public and private partnerships that are working to keep the program moving and growing. It's comprised of government agencies, faith-based agencies, community organizations like the YMCA, private insurers, public insurers, all coming together to really expand the program and build awareness for it. Purchasers. Oh, sorry, was that the one I forgot? And purchasers. Thank you. See, I mean, I come with humility. I know this is not my wheelhouse, so I appreciate it. I'm sorry, one thing. So in that second, in the bottom row, in the second blurb with the circle, that's really where the CDC sits. We administer the Diabetes Prevention Recognition Program. We love our acronyms, DPRP. This is, in a nutshell, the quality assurance arm of the National Diabetes Prevention Program Lifestyle Change Program. And this is critical because we ensure that any organization that is delivering the program that seeks CDC recognition is adherent to the science of the Diabetes Prevention Program. There are many things out there around diabetes prevention or other areas, but unless they can say they have CDC recognition, we don't know that they're adhering to the science. So We talk a lot about CDC recognition, and this is why, because we can provide technical support, we do curriculum review, we provide support and training for lifestyle coaches to really ensure that the program is meeting the science, to ensure that the people that are receiving it are truly going to be able to prevent type 2 diabetes. The program is set up around four strategic goals, starting in the top right-hand corner, increasing the supply of quality CDC-recognized programs, which is what I just spoke about, increasing demand for the national DPP among people at risk. So if there's 84 million people at risk, it's pretty much a no-brainer. It has to be population-wide awareness, and we're working on that in a number of avenues. Increasing referrals from healthcare providers. We have a number of relationships with American Medical Association, ACPM, and others to really work with health systems to expand referrals, and then coverage and reimbursement, which is why I am here today. So what do these four numbers mean? So they mean a lot to me in CDC speak, but probably mean very little to you. They're basically our CDC shorthand for the names of our cooperative agreements or our grants that we've been funding over the past 5 years to state and national partners. If you want to know a federal secret, the first two numbers of each number represents the fiscal year that it came out. So now you know something about the federal government that you probably didn't. Briefly, we've been working on expanding coverage through our funded partners and state health departments for the past 5 years. Under 1212, we funded six national organizations, including NACDD, to reach out to employers, and we're all hearing from them today. Under 1305 and 1422, we've funded states and subawardees to achieve state employee coverage or Medicaid coverage. I'm really excited to say Texas is a state that has state employee coverage for the national DPP, so we're really excited when we can add another state to our map. And then 1705 is our most recent cooperative agreement where we have funded 10 national or regional organizations to scale the program in underserved areas. When we say underserved, we mean areas that don't have a CDC-recognized organization in them. By and large, a lot of the big cities have them, but there are huge swaths of the country that don't. In part, there's really low population amounts, so it's kind of hard to run a program, but at the same time, we need to continue to scale the program. So this funding opportunity will help get us there. To our knowledge, there are currently over 100 commercial health plans that provide some level of coverage for the program. This includes Medicaid coverage for the program in Montana and Minnesota. We have demonstration projects going on for Medicaid in Oregon and Maryland, and then California and New Jersey are coming online this year for Medicaid coverage. This includes our state oh my gosh, what happened? I blew it up. I'll just keep talking. And then I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the Medicare expansion is beginning April 1st, and so they will be covering the Medicare DPP then, and we're really excited to see that take off. My next slide was a slide of the United States showing which states had established coverage, and you get to see Texas in there along with 14 other states, including California, Oregon, Washington, I won't list them all. And we have pilots running in states. In effect, we're working with their state employee groups, or our state health departments are working with their state employers to run the program and establish coverage there. And we have over 3 million covered lives through that avenue. I'm glad I brought my slides up. Preparation. Okay. Well, I was going to use the next few minutes to run through a few resources we've developed to help payers, business coalitions, employers, purchasers, anyone to help get a little more information and plug and play with calculators to help see what the benefit is in a more applied setting. And so we have several free toolkits available on our website or other websites that I have in my slides that you can't see. But if you get them afterwards, you'll be able to see them. The first is called the Diabetes State Burden Toolkit. And this is actually a toolkit that's been developed by Hey, you're welcome. Thank you. am I going to get the award for working best under pressure?
Progress. Yes, absolutely. But I'm glad you have your handout with you there.
Yeah, right. So we have a toolkit that helps estimate the cost of doing nothing. And hey, thank you. Perfect. Whew. The Diabetes State Burden Toolkit can model health, economic, and mortality burden if you more or less do nothing. And this is a really good way to articulate, you know, to a, sadly we only have this at the state level, but you can take this to an employer within a state and say, if you do nothing for your beneficiaries or for your employees, this is what will happen. As Dr. Kyle said before us, the cost of diabetes will crush us. It is a costly and it is a complicated disease. And we've been able to articulate that in this toolkit. On the other side, I like to say that this is the yin to that toolkit's yang. This is the Diabetes Prevention Impact Toolkit. And we have this at a state level, at an employer level, and an insurer level. This will help provide estimates to you and your populations about the return on investment, about the quality adjusted life years saved, cost savings, if you do implement the program. It has default settings, but it also has the ability for you to plug and play with your own data. It's fun, but it's also, it takes some time, so check it out, but be patient, play with it, reach out if you have questions. We really want to help you use it. It's a pretty strong tool. Next, and Allie's going to speak about this briefly, we have the National DPP Coverage Toolkit, and it is a very in-depth, detailed toolkit that provides tremendous resources for Medicaid, Medicare Advantage, but also commercial health plans that are considering implementing it. It provides detailed knowledge around billing, reimbursement, there are a couple other things, but check it out. It has a tremendous amount of information. It also includes a step-by-step guide around implementing the program and what an employer or a plan or a coalition really needs to do. This is something we've heard from a lot of organizations that this is all great, but really help us figure out the step-by-step. And so this toolkit includes several step-by-step guides. First, know the program, know what you're talking about, be able to make the case, use the toolkits I just talked about. Build your lifestyle change network, and that means really training your lifestyle coach, finding the space, ascertaining who your population is going to be. Engage program participants. We know that it has to come from senior management, from senior leadership. It can't just be from the bottom up. And then enroll and retain members, and that in and of itself could be another 60-minute presentation. The American Medical Association also has an employer toolkit that is similar and very useful. It includes another implementation guide that's 8 steps. It includes the pre-diabetes risk assessment, some other ROI estimates, and more materials to make the case. I think it's all to say we have a lot of great resources. Please check them all out. They can really help and be useful. This is my last slide. This thing is a little twitchy. There we go. So I will pass it on over to all these other presenters I'm really looking forward to hear. I would just want to end with, please know that the National DPP Lifestyle Change Program has been proven to be cost effective, and we want to work with you to make it available to your beneficiaries, or if you want information, we want to help you with it. So there you go. I hope it doesn't freak out on you.
All right.
Yeah.
For Medicare and the comorbidities between diabetes and depression from the January 17 thing on behavioral health, the coordinated care thing. Will there be coordination between the two programs, expected or
I'm not sure.
Regular?
Let me let's follow up afterwards and we can discuss and I can follow up with you. I don't believe so, but let's follow up afterwards.
And I think what we're going to do is we have a lot to get through, so we're going to have the panelists all present. If we have time at the end for Q&A, we'll be happy to take questions, but the panelists will all be here through the break at least to answer any questions. Thanks. Allie.
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Allie Jaglowski with the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors. I just wanted to say a little bit about who we are and ask who in the room has heard of the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors. All right, a handful, great. We're a national association. We're founded in 1988, and we work with state health department staff that focus on preventing chronic disease. So in all 50 states and territories, we have a presence. We've got 6,500 plus members growing all the time. My colleague John Patton is here, and he was handing out cards earlier encouraging people to join for free. So you can become a member of our association if you aren't already and you want to learn more about what we're doing. We focus on all major chronic diseases and preventing them, but I'm here today to talk about the work that we're doing specifically around diabetes prevention. And just to highlight what our mission is, it's to improve the health of the public by strengthening state-based leadership and expertise for chronic disease prevention and control in states at the national level. John said our executive director would be delighted to know I included this slide, so you guys can let him know if you meet him. There's three things that I want to cover today, the relationship that NACDD has with the national DPP. First, I'm going to cover some of our state engagement meetings, and some of you may have already been part of a state engagement meeting. You may be aware. I know we were just here in Texas. We partner with Levitt Partners, a health intelligence firm, the American Medical Association, and the American Association of Diabetes Educators to do those state engagement meetings. We have direct support for the DPP in some of those numbers that Rachel shared. In 1212 that was covered, we worked in two cities, and that's what I'm going to talk a little bit about today. And on the slide, it should say 1212 covered the years 2012 through 2017. It was a five-year cooperative agreement. And then their new cooperative agreement that's out, 1705, we also were fortunate enough to be a recipient of, and we're going to be working in four states. And then finally, I'm just going to touch a little bit also on the coverage toolkit because I think it's such an important toolkit that we want to make sure you remember it. So in terms of the state engagement meetings, we work with state health departments and their stakeholders to bring together folks that care about preventing diabetes at the state level. And that's everyone from employers to insurers, other state agencies. We always try to include the agency that's covering Medicaid. And anybody that really cares about preventing diabetes in their state, we want at that meeting, all of the stakeholders. And they come together for about a day and a half. The first day really is designed to educate, as Rachel pointed out already, and as we saw by the number of hands that went up in the room, the people that were aware of what prediabetes is, we have a lot of work to do around awareness. So we spent a lot of time raising awareness, talking about those four components that Rachel shared earlier that are so critical to the national DPP, that's raising awareness about the DPP. How are we going to cover the national DPP? How do we get more access to programs? And how do we connect to health systems? So those are kind of the four big topics that we cover at these meetings. And they leave with an action plan, and they also leave with support from NACDD and also the CDC to implement that action plan and to work together. All right, so as I just said, the objectives, there's four for these action plans. One is to look at how to increase awareness of prediabetes in a state, how to increase screening and testing within the health system, how to increase the public and private coverage for it, and then finally how to increase support for and the availability of it. And what we want to really stress is the role that you all play in helping to encourage the insurers that you may be working with to cover this, but also to look at it potentially as a covered benefit from employers that you're working with to cover it. So far to date, we have 35 states that we have either completed a state engagement meeting in or we have plans for in this next year. And I wanted to show this map because if you are working in any of these 35 states and you were not part of the meeting when it happened in your state, we'd love to connect you. So please come see me, come see Rachel or my colleague John Patton. We would love to make sure that you're connected to the work that's happening in your state because it's not something that just the CDC can handle or just your state health department can handle. It's really something that we have to all do together. All right, so what I wanted to talk mainly about today is the work that we did under the number 1212. We were fortunate enough to be one of six national organizations that were funded by the CDC, and back then in 2012, we were pioneering, I think, in some ways, this project and trying to get the word out about prediabetes. We partnered with an organization called MedWorks, and MedWorks really helped us understand how to better communicate with groups like you all. We are really good at understanding how to communicate with state health departments and working in chronic disease prevention, but I would say the DPP was one of the first projects that really brought us even closer to working with purchasers of healthcare, working with employers, and really trying to understand how you went about making your decisions. In working with MedWorks, we identified two metropolitan areas that we wanted specifically to focus on, and that was New York City and the Philadelphia metro area. And through MedWorks, that's how we kind of, when we got together, one of the first orders of business was, how do we want to go about approaching this? And under their suggestion, they said, you need to reach out to the business coalitions in these areas. You need to reach out to the Northeast Business Coalition. You need to reach out to the Greater Philadelphia Business Coalition. You need to get to know their members. You need to get to know what's driving their members to make decisions and understand what is having an impact on prediabetes and diabetes prevention in those areas. And so those were, our first steps was to make those connections with the business coalitions. And I would say the first few years we really spent on raising awareness and just trying to get out there. In some cases, it felt like being a salesperson for selling the national DPP. This is what it is. It's evidence-based. This is how important it is for you. What do you think? Do you want to buy it? And in most cases, everyone said, that sounds great, but there's so many other projects and so many other programs, and there's a lot of other noise right now around health promotion. Thanks, but get back to us in 6 months, in a year. So we were diligent, and we continued to come to the meetings. We continued to bring our presentations, and I would say there was definitely a breaking point eventually where we did get some employers that you're going to hear from today that said, you know what, you're right, this is something we want to offer for our employees. And so with our support, we started to help those organizations identify how they wanted to provide access. Was it for an in-person program, like Rachel mentioned, maybe a YMCA or somebody that's offering out in the community? Was it something they wanted to do in-house? And you'll hear from one of the employers, they decided to try to work in-house by engaging with an academic medical institution that was going to provide it just to them. And another example, an employer decided to work with a virtual program. And you'll hear more about that virtual program on this panel and the next panel. And so we really started to see some momentum. But then it came down to also the cost of the program. This isn't in our budgets. We weren't planning to do this. So how can you help us with that? And one of the things that we did under the 1212 grant was we created what we called a stimulus, a national DPP stimulus that we made available to some of the employers that we were working with through Neil's group, and said, if you don't have it in your budget to do it right now, but maybe you want to, you know, you want to start working towards getting some evidence and some experience to be able to take back to the folks that make decisions in your organization around budget, let us help you. Let us offer a cohort. Let us help promote it. Let us help, you know, develop marketing materials. And so that's what we did. We created this stimulus opportunity. We connected employers to marketing materials, to trusted consultants that knew what they were doing, and also directly to programs. One of the big programs being Kappa Health, who is a virtual program provider. And we were delighted to see some of the results. And Neil, could you show the case studies document? One of the things that we did that kind of brought us here today is this case studies document that we partnered with the Greater Philadelphia Business Coalition on Health to develop for us. And I don't know, do you want to just say a few words about it?
This is based on six case studies in New York and Philadelphia. We distributed this already through the National Alliance, so at least for coalition directors, you should have seen this before, but it's available on the National Alliance website, I believe, and we can also make it available to anybody who hasn't seen it. You're going to hear from two of the case studies today. Ali, the other thing, just while you've yielded the mic to me, just quickly, just talk a little bit about what is the cost and the pay-for-performance model, because I think that will be of interest to employers as well.
Sure, sure. So I would say the cost varies. varies. It depends on how you want to offer it, who you want to get to offer it, and who's reimbursing for it. So in the example of the Medicare that's coming online in April of this year, I believe they're reimbursing at about $465 per person per year, something in that range.
They hit all the benchmarks.
I know the YMCA is around that same kind of price point, but you can also get on a sliding scale with the YMCA. There are other virtual providers that I know, kind of there's a spectrum of bells and whistles that you can get with different programs. Some can be as expensive as $600 per person, but many of the virtual providers and the in-person providers have now moved to a pay-for-performance model, so very much getting online with value-based care and kind of the direction that we're going in with some of the ACOs that we're seeing, and really looking at if you are not helping your individual reach their weight loss goal, you're not going to get paid. And so that's kind of the trend that we're seeing. I would say that a lot of the vendors I've worked with very much are willing to negotiate with employers, negotiate with purchasers. They believe in their models. They believe in this evidence-based program. So they want an opportunity to show you that it works. So I would say it varies, but in terms of the pay-for-performance, I've definitely seen a lot of the virtual providers say, if we don't help your employees lose weight, we don't get paid. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of value in that and safety in testing something like that. So, go ahead.
Just a comment on that.
Sure.
The annual additional cost of a person with obesity or diabetes ranges from $4,000 to $7,000 a year. So think about an intervention that might have 30 or 40% effectiveness in terms of achieving that 5% weight loss goal and paying $400 or $500 for that. You don't need to, although I still think you should, you don't need to use the CDC calculator to tell you there's a positive cost effectiveness case here. I said you don't need to, but you should. Yeah, okay.
So the last thing that I want to say about the case studies that we did, and I think the other presenters will touch on this today, is there's a number of takeaways that we compiled and that Neil's group compiled for us that look at, how can you be successful in marketing, how can you be successful in attaining the folks, recruiting them, getting them to stay in your program, paying for the program, sustaining the program, and evaluating the program. So there's a lot of great takeaways that were in there. And so this is, you can see what the document looks like. And I'm not going to say much more about the Coverage Toolkit other than you should really check it out. CoverageToolkit.org. It's very easy to use, and particularly around the commercial plans, I think you'll find a lot of value in there around things like, just check it out. So, all right, I'm going to go ahead and pass it over.
All right. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
So my name is Mark Goldberg. I run the global wellness program at a company called Latham & Watkins. And I'm actually willing to bet that nobody in this audience has ever heard of Latham & Watkins before. Oh, we got one, two. Whoa, all right. I'm glad I didn't place some cash on it.
Almost as many people heard of the National DPP.
So for those of you who don't know Latham, we are one of the largest law firms in the world. I'll just tell you a little bit about us just to give you a little bit of context. We're called one of the global elite business law firms. We've got offices in about 35 of the biggest cities in the US, Europe, Middle East, and Asia. We've got about 5,000 people. Half of them are attorneys. Half of them are people who support attorneys, whether they're secretaries or HR or technology or librarians, things like that. The type of law that we do is corporate law, so big mergers and acquisitions, antitrust cases, bet the company litigations that are in the billions of dollars. We don't have a headquarters. And this is important because we're not one of those companies that has 90% of their people in one location that it's really easy to target. Every office in the Latham universe is equal, and our folks are spread all around the country, all around the world, which presents a little bit of a logistical challenge from a wellness perspective. And the other thing is our attorneys bill out in 6-minute increments. So time is money for them, and their folks who work 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18-hour days, no exaggeration, I'm an attorney, I'm a former Latham attorney, so I can tell you from personal experience, to pay attention to anything that's not client related is tough. It's tough to get our attorney's attention. It's tough to get them away from their desks for health and wellness. So in this context, I, a couple of years ago, went to a Northeast Business Group on Health presentation where your colleague Ann Albright from the CDC was there.
My boss.
And Ali, a couple of your colleagues from NACDD were there. And you know, I left wowed. I went back to the firm and I said, I found our next big project. And honestly, everything that I knew about the program was from your two organizations, and especially your colleagues were such a big help in just helping us figure out how to even get started in this. So let me tell you a little bit about what we did at Latham and our experience to date. So I sit in the New York office, although I work globally for the firm. So we started in New York. And the model that we decided to do was to partner with a local top-tier medical center. And the reason for that is, you know, I work with lawyers and people who support lawyers, and I say this with love as an attorney, we're all snobs, right? You know, attorneys and support staff for attorneys, you know, they're experts in the field, they work with experts in the field, they want to hear from someone who's an expert in their field. So while we could have gone out and worked with the YMCA or you know, I could have gotten trained as a lifestyle coach, but they don't want to hear it from me. They want to hear it from nurses or dietitians or nutritionists. So we chose this model to partner with a medical center. We ended up pairing up with Weill Cornell New York Presbyterian, who had never done the program before. So we figured it out together. It took us over a year to figure it out. But in 2015, in conjunction with Weill Cornell, we ran two cohorts in New York and had a lot of success. We're very happy with the results. We were so happy that we then turned our sights to Los Angeles, where we had three offices. We ended up speaking to UCLA Medical Center, who had also never done it before. And we said, well, you know, we have a little bit of experience. We can figure it out together. And what took us over a year in New York took us maybe 9 months in Los Angeles. We started late in the year in 2016. And we have already completed four cohorts in Los Angeles, and we have two cohorts currently about halfway through the process. Then we got a little cocky and we said, let's take this show on the road even farther. We turned to our Chicago office. We partnered with Northwestern Medical Center, and in 6 months, we had the program up and running, and we said, okay, now we're getting good at this. We figured out what works, we figured out what doesn't. Likewise, Northwestern had never done this before, and we said, don't worry, we can walk you through this. We have one cohort that we started earlier this year, and I'm happy to say the last 2 days I spent in Houston talking to a couple of medical centers, and it was great to walk in. You know, one of them had never done it before. I said, hey, 3 months we're gonna have this up and running. I'll tell you everything you need to know. And you know, for us, a lot of it was about just figuring out what the model was. And then, you know, kind of learning from our experiences, refining it, and then just figuring out how to scale it up. We've been going kind of city by city at this point, and we've got 35 cities around the globe, so we realize that's not the ultimate answer. But being able to have the programs live on site has been a big help. Although on the drawing board is to eventually enact an online version. And just in the interest of full disclosure, the on-site programs that I'm going to talk about are mostly attended by our staff members. And the reason for that is, you know, it requires a commitment. It requires people, you know, for 16 weekly sessions to say, I'm going to be in this conference room, you know, every Wednesday from 12 to 1, which is easier for people who work 9 to 5 than it is for people who work, you know, 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. and whenever the client calls them. So I think the online version eventually will be better suited to some of our attorneys whose schedules are just all over the place. Although we have had some attorneys who, to their credit, have found a way to make the current program work. All right, so what did we do? What is our approach? So we, so far, have been doing it on-site in our offices. It's fully paid by the firm, and we present it as a wellness program. So it's, we don't go through insurance. We've got, when I hear CMS and all those things, my eyes glaze over because it comes out of my wellness budget. and it's fully covered. We hold it during the lunch hour, so for those hourly workers, we have them clock out, and we tell them to bring their lunch, which is actually great, because as they're talking about nutrition and all that, they're eating, and they're saying, okay, well, what are you eating? What are you eating? So that we found that works well. Like I said, we partner with a top-tier medical center, and we kind of have what I call the two-for-one approach. So in order to qualify for the program, the person has to be pre-diabetic. So how do you know if they're pre-diabetic? We offer on-site A1C. It's the finger prick blood tests. You know, they prick your finger, they put in a little machine, it spins for 6 minutes and 40 seconds. So we tell people, get pricked, go get a coffee, come back, and then it prints out a little number with your A1C score. And we have these giant posters that say, here's the green range, you know, you're in the safe range if you're under this number. Here's the pre-diabetic range, which is yellow. Here's the red range, which is diabetic. So it's very easy. People look at the number, and you know, if they're happy, they walk out of the room. If they're not happy, we have the medical center do the A1C test. We usually host a couple of days of testing in the office, and we make sure that the coach for the program is there. We put him or her in a separate room next door, and we say, hey, after you get tested, if you want to talk to someone about your number, because we don't know what the number is, right? For HIPAA, I have nothing to do. I'm kind of at the registration table, right? I don't know what their score is. But I say there's someone next door in a private room who can chat with you, whether it's about your number, whether it's about questions about diabetes for family members, or whatever it is. And you know, people go next door. The coach can refer them to resources at the medical center. And they also say, for those who are pre-diabetic, don't worry, we've got you covered. We're going to be offering this program. Here's what it's all about. So we get a lot of people who register through that, and then we run the program. But the reason I call this a two-for-one approach is because with the A1C test, it actually ends up being just a general diabetes awareness campaign for a couple of weeks. It gets it on people's radar, it gets people thinking about it, and honestly, we sell out these, it's free, but you know, we fill up all the slots in these on-site testing. You know, we say, come down the hall to the conference room, it's gonna take 6 minutes. And we get a lot of people who come, and some people come and don't sign up for the program, and then you know, I'll be on site 6 months later for a retest, and they'll come up to me and say, you know, I got tested here a month ago, you have no idea who I am because I didn't do the program, but I went to my doctor and I've lost 30 pounds. So even the people who don't do the program, we find the benefit from just having the A1C test, and it's not mixed up with biometrics or flu shots or other things that it's just too much noise. It's on its own, and that's been really effective. And the thing that always amazes me is sometimes we get the millennials who come in and they get like a 5.7 and they're in the safe range and they go next door to talk to the coach because they're like, I got an A, but I want an A plus. How do I get like a 5.1? Which is interesting. But anyway, so we start off with the A1C test. We offer the year-long program. And then everybody always asks me about incentives. Do you offer incentives? We're not a big incentive firm, right? We're not one of those companies that says, you know, get your flu shot and you get a $10 Starbucks gift card. Do this and you get something. That's just not our approach. That being said, we do have a global walking challenge where everybody gets a Fitbit. It's under my shirt. So the folks who are participating in the diabetes prevention program, they all have Fitbits to help with their physical activity. If they didn't do the walking challenge, we give them one. But the one actual incentive that we offer with the diabetes prevention program, the core program, the weekly sessions are 16 of them. So we say, we want you to come to all of them, but to make sure you're going to come to at least 14 of those 16, if you come to 14, we're going to give you a Fitbit Aria scale, which is one of those fancy electronic scales. It pairs up with your Fitbit and with an app. It's really fun, and it's, you know, people love it. I'm shocked how much they love it. And it's one of those incentives that I really want to give, because if I can get them after 16 weeks to be excited about weighing themselves because they've got this new toy, I mean, I'm throwing the scales at them. They don't know it, but I really want to give them that incentive. All right, so what have we learned from these programs? We have great experience working with the medical centers. The name recognition goes a long way to getting people to sign up for the program, to get them involved. Sometimes it's a challenge to coordinate with a large medical institution. At the beginning, it was always, do we talk to their corporate wellness people? Do we talk to the endocrinology department? Do we talk to the, you know, Association of Diabetes Educators who happen to work there? And different institutions have kind of different doors. Usually you go in one door and you'll end up in the appropriate door. You know, another challenge is when you get a nurse or when you get a dietitian or a nutritionist come on site for the program, the medical center is going to calculate this in, here's how much they're valued in the clinic, right? If they can see X patients in an hour, this is the financial cost of that. If we're going to take them away from the clinic for an hour, this is how much it costs. So it's a, you know, we went in thinking we love this pay-for-performance model, but there's some other considerations to keep in mind. Privacy issues, it's great to partner with the medical centers because they keep all the data privacy. The only things that we want to know is attendance. And we're very keen to data privacy. We don't even label the conference rooms and the reservations as diabetes prevention program. We come up with the name of the coach. We just put that as the name on the conference room. So nobody even knows who's involved in the program, who's going in. We learned to add orientation programs. We have folks sign what we call a good faith agreement, saying that they're going to make their best efforts to come to all the classes, come to all the sessions. We assign teachers helpers for all of the classes so that, you know, if handouts are missing, if there's a problem with the conference room, there's folks on site who can help with that. We also schedule assigned makeup calls. So if people can't come to that weekly class because they're out of the office, they're on vacation, they're busy, the following Monday, at a certain time, there's a makeup call where the coach just calls into a conference line number, does a mini version of the class, and that way people can keep on track even if they miss it. These are all things that we learned over time. And then finally, you know, defining success. I'm sure the CDC has, you know, certain criteria that they look at in terms of, you know, the weight shifting, the attendance, things like that. What we found is that there are a lot of different ways to define success. And I'll just give you one really quick example. I had a partner, a very senior partner in New York, who participated in the program. He stopped after the first 16 sessions. He didn't do the full year. So probably from the CDC perspective, that's a dropout. And, you know, that's maybe not a success. I talked to him. He said, Mark, this has been phenomenal. I learned so much in these 16 weeks. I've made a lot of changes. You know, I'm really busy, I can't commit to coming to the others, but I've learned a lot, and this has helped me incredibly, thank you. So I define that as a success. I think, you know, you need to kind of broaden your interpretation of what you're looking to get out of the program when you do it on site. And then just finally, one of the things that we're starting to deal with now is we've had people who have finished this year-long program, and what kind of ongoing supports can we provide to them? So we're now looking to set up our alumni program and figuring out, does that just mean like a quarterly check-in? Does that mean something else? But what can we do to make sure that after that year is over, we're not just kind of scooting people on their way? Thank you.
Great, thanks. Now you'll hear a very different kind of case.
I was just gonna say that because a lot of things that he said didn't work for him, worked for us. So excited to share VWR's experience with the National Diabetes Prevention Program. I want to apologize. Something must have happened to the fat font size of the word national because for some reason it's not. So I apologize.
It's okay.
VWR,
we're still grateful.
VWR, as Neil said, we are a leading global provider of product and service solutions, mostly to the laboratory and production customers. So we service customers in pharmaceutical, biotech, education, government, anything you might see in a lab, VWR can supply. We have about 4,100 employees in the U.S. And about 30. We have about 80% enrollment in our company benefits, so it's about 3,800 U.S. employees enrolled in our company benefits. And as health and productivity manager, I'm primarily responsible for health and well-being programs specifically for the U.S. We are a self-funded insurance plan, so obviously it triggers why the health of our employees is important to us. And for 10 years, we've been involved in offering health and well-being programs. So when we bring new programs to our associates, they're kind of used to new things coming out each year, and we hope when we were delivering this program, it brought some excitement to our associates. So just some background data. That some of our data is no different than many employer groups. From our medical plan data, we have about 7% diagnosed as diabetic. We've had some years as low as 5.5% diabetic, but we were in acquisition mode for many years, and the companies we were inquiring didn't have the greatest health indicators. So we're about 77% diabetic. We do offer annual biometric screenings. So we do offer blood sugar testing on an annual basis to those enrolled in our medical plan. From that data, we do know that about 20% are considered pre-diabetic from just a fasting blood sugar. Our annual medical spend, about 5% of our annual medical spend is on just diabetes care alone. That increases to close to 10 to 12% when we look at all the comorbid conditions of the diabetics diagnosed on our medical plan. We have worked with Kappa Health in the past through their My Dietitian program, and it was a virtual program. About 35% of our associate population works remotely, whether they're sales associates working out in the field, or we have what we call VWR Catalyst, which is our solutions side of our business, where we have on-site staff in responsible for stock rooms at Johnson & Johnson or other large pharmaceuticals. So about 35% of our population is remote. We have about 8 locations in the US that have anywhere between 50 to 400 employees. And in the past, we've tried to implement the on-site national DPP. We couldn't really get leadership support to allow some of our call center reps or other associates to be gone for an hour. And we didn't have large enough interest to do the on-site DPP. So when Kappa Health and the NACDD came to us with the opportunity to pilot the national DPP through Kappa Health, we were really excited because we've had some really great success with the past kind of virtual programs that we implemented. So we identified some additional criteria kind of above the national DPP eligibility requirements for the virtual Kappa Health national DPP. The associates had to be enrolled in our company medical plan. They had to have completed a biometric screening through our program in the past 2 years, and then obviously received a blood sugar, fasting blood glucose of 100 milligrams per deciliter or greater. We also had anyone who met those criteria had to opt in to the program. So they had to call Kappa Health to complete a risk questionnaire that included some of the standard age, gender, health history questions. And they also asked some very detailed readiness questions to determine, like Mark said, we really wanted people who would actively commit to this year-long program. We had several people that called and were very interested. After the first email, I think we had 70 employees within the first couple days of the first email communication going out that contacted Kappa, and many of them were traveling within the next 3 months. They just said certain things to Kappa Health that triggered they're not going to be active, potentially not going to be active participants. So we really wanted to make sure they could actively commit to the program. So we offered Kappa Health, I'm going to give you a little bit background on what the program was and then talk about some of our results. We had offered Kappa Health as a virtual DPP. It is available through computer or for a smartphone app. The first core phase is the first 16, I'm sorry, let me see. Nope. The program has different components, very similar to the national DPP and the on-site. It does provide the health, the professional health coaching. The registered dietitians are actually certified in the lifestyle coaching through the CDC, and they're the ones that deliver the 16 weeks of online content. It's delivered through a virtual kind of format through the mobile app or online. There's an online community support, so participants have to engage in the online community at least once a week. And that would, it's a timed program, so this whole cohort of our employees are going through this program together, and so they all had to connect on the online community together. They used a lot of smart tools, so in addition to Fitbits that they could sync up to the program, they also received a digital scale, and all that data would be sent back to the licensed registered dietitian running the program. They also had the opportunity to photo journal their food, so easily take pictures of their food, document water consumption, physical activity, and upload it into the app which would be sent to the registered dietitian. And they got real-time coaching from that dietitian. At least 5 days a week, as long as the participant was uploading information, they got counseling back from the registered dietitian. So they would establish goals around what they wanted to do when it comes to changing their eating habits. And the dietitian would give them real-time coaching at least 5 days a week, whether it's through a video message or text message back to the participant. And so those are the main components of the program. So the first phase, as previously described, was 16 weeks. The participants had to complete the online virtual module once a week for those first 16 weeks. Also, to be considered kind of engaged in the program, they had to download the educational PDF to read it. They had to at least connect with their registered dietitian through a meal upload or a physical activity upload once a week. And those were all kind of criteria that identified whether they were engaged in those first 16 weeks. The second phase of the program is the rest of the year. The significant change is the virtual modules, which there were more, went from a weekly requirement to complete to a monthly requirement to complete. And then they also had access to the registered dietitian and the photojournaling of food for the rest of the year. And they also had access to that online community for the rest of the year. So, you know, working closely with Kappa Health and NACDD, they provided a lot of great communications for us to really use. We didn't have to come up with our own. And it was real messages that helped us connect with our associates. So we first tapped into our HR team in the US and also our network of 100 plus wellness champions throughout the US and introduced the program, talked about what our communication timeline was gonna be, who we're targeting. And we had some real key messages in the emails that we sent out. Things like join for free, and we identified that it was a close to a $550 value, so there really was a financial savings in their mind if they were able to get this program. We had 30 cohort spots, so we really emphasized, you know, you could get one out of 30 spots. So there was, some time sensitivity to getting that spot and, like, making that spot feel important. The fact that they got to work with a registered dietitian for a year was great, as well as getting, you know, some cool tools like the digital scale and the pedometer. We also really emphasized a short registration period. We started our communications after the end of our biometric screening period, where we knew all of our associates had their results. People were talking about the results, because we do tie results to our biometric screening to reductions, outcome-based reductions in healthcare contributions. So we had a 2-week registration period, and we also sent a last chance offer email. So we really spent a lot of time with Kappa Health and NACDD to really make sure our messages were kind of real and able to connect and engage to our audience. So we had 30 spots provided by funding through the NACDD. We had 27 individuals officially registered at the beginning of the cohort because we did have to have a start date. We had 2 people withdraw due to lack of time within the first month. We had 1 removed due to a BMI requirement and 2 that didn't even engage in the program in the first month. So, you know, we had 22 people officially registered, downloaded the app, or created an account online, and they were in our final cohort. So really good engagement results. You know, close to 70% of our population participated in 80% or more of the program. And so that, again, meant, you know, they interacted with the registered dietitian, they watched the virtual module, they downloaded the PDF, they touched base in the online community. So we had really good engagement at the end of the program. And we did, you know, Kappa Health does offer the pay for performance, so they do measure average pounds lost and weight loss. This just shows some of our average pounds lost per the engaged group. So this is 22 people. So we had significant weight loss for those people that were engaged 80% or more of the time. Can't really, you know, explain that people that were participating less than 50% of the time still lost on average 14 pounds a week. So, you know, you could say maybe they were engaging with the dietitian and that's what helped them lose the weight, but they weren't doing the other pieces of the program. Maybe they were doing the virtual modules, learning some things, but they weren't engaging with the dietitian. And so just that small piece helped. But that's kind of an odd to see that much weight loss for people that participated in less than 50% of the program. So at the end of the 12 months, you know, participants did have the digital scales to send data back to the registered dietitian. Some of them didn't send it throughout the program, but at the end of the 12 months, we did get weight data from all 22 final participants. And you know, overall, there's about 82% engagement rate, 10.77 average pounds lost, and on average about 5.22% weight loss. And the goal was 5% or more for the cohort. Just to share some of what participants said about the program, Vanessa talked more about the thing she learned the most was learning how to prepare meals and being more thoughtful about when she was eating, focusing on what am I eating now versus what really should I be eating. She also talked about how her husband of 36 years, they work now together to kind of experiment with food choices, and they're more open to experimenting with food choices. Jessica had some biometric data that improved, and she definitely saw some changes in her erratic blood sugar results from year to year, but the big thing for her was she lost 37 pounds. She was very excited about that. And Robin wanted to tell us that it wasn't just about weight loss for her. She went down a few, three sizes, which is big, but she only lost, I believe it was 12.5 pounds. But her cholesterol went from 237 to 189, HDL from 54, or down, or up to 54, so it raised, and LDL from 162 to 119. So she wasn't so much focused on weight, despite losing three sizes, which is significant, from an 18 to 14. So thank you. You know, our experience with the virtual program was really great. And like Mark said, you kind of have to figure out which works, what's going to work for your population. And this was a success for us in our mind.
Great. So we just have a couple of minutes left, unfortunately, Chris.
Story of my life.
Yeah.
I'll be very brief.
Great.
Obviously by necessity. Houston Business Coalition on Health. I'm the executive director. Collectively, we have 90 organizations. We represent about 2.3 million national lives. But with respect to the NDPP, you can't do it alone. You need those community partners. Working with Cities Changing Diabetes, sponsored through Novo Nordisk, Texas AHEC, Texas Department of State Health Services, working with NACCD, working with CDC, working with AADE, so many acronyms, so little time. So a little bit of background. We're doing the pilot now. It started as a result of a 1305 grant. Much like it mentioned, we had an all stakeholder meeting. 200 some people showed up, developed a quick start action plan, created a task force of all different stakeholders, because you can't do this on your own. It requires the health systems, it requires the health plans, the DPP providers, et cetera. One of the things that, another little tidbit, is all DPP providers are not created the same. You didn't mention, there's about 1,200 DPP registrants on the CDC site. Well, more now, I guess, but what, when I looked, there were only 125 at that point who were recognized. Now we have a preliminary recognition. So we did a deep dive, mm-hmm. and were to help employers steer to the best providers, mm-hmm. some of whom are in this room, I may add. But we also had to work with the health plans. How do you get that damn code switched on? It's not mm-hmm. as simple as you may think. How do you get the brokers and consultants, who are really the gatekeepers, to buy into this? They have to be part of the discussion so that they are recommending it. And then there's different ways to keep track of the data, but we're collecting ours in a little bit different way, where we're going to have a control group. We want to do longitudinal claim analysis. We want to show that this works in the Houston market. Our grant required that we had three employers. We've got 9 early adopters. You have to know who your early adopters are. So that's the quick assessment there. But I think what helped, and this is kind of a la a David Letterman type of thing. We had our top 10 list of why you should be part of the DPP. So if this is working properly, persons with diabetes average more than $10,000 in annual health care costs, which is more than twice those of the healthy individuals. Number two. Approximately 30% of the workforce is pre-diabetic, and 15 to 30% of those convert to type 2 diabetes within 5 years. Number three, the year-long DPP has demonstrated a 58% conversion in type 2 diabetes. We've heard that. Number four, there is a cost calculator. There's a $2,671 annual cost savings. It's amazing you get down to the dollar, but I'm sure there's a little variance there. But it's over 3 years. Someone mentioned the continuing care after that. I think the data supports you have to do that. We're not trying to boil the ocean. We're getting 20 to 100, depending on the size of the company, of folks within that pre-diabetic population to show that it works in their organization rather than to just, you know, throw it out there for everyone. Number six, costs about $500. You can fund it through your health plan. You can fund it through your wellness budget. We heard both examples here. At least for the pilot, number seven, there's a lot of support. Working with NACCD, AADE, CDC, these are all great people to work with, and we're getting that support to get them on board. Number eight, it's going to be required by Medicare, so it's more than likely going to be the employer standard going forward, so you may as well do it now, especially if you're going to get all this help. Number nine, we've received some positive press, our coalition has Niels. We've had articles published about us. We know we're being followed nationally and by the state, so there's an opportunity for recognition. And number 10, you know, it's just the right thing to do. It improves population health and total well-being. So is that quick enough?
Very good. That's a great summary, Chris.
Very
thank
good.
You. Thank you. Good. So a lot of great resources were mentioned today. We won't have time for Q&A, but feel free to look at all those different websites and toolkits that were mentioned, and I hope this was helpful. Thank you, panelists.